Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, good morning. This is Doug Field, the CEO of the Institute for Healthcare Consumerism, and welcome to this week's edition of Healthcare Consumerism Radio. Appreciate you joining us today, right before Labor Day weekend. We're coming to you from rainy Atlanta, Georgia, on the outskirts of the hurricane. I'm also flying solo right now this morning because our radio producer, Jonathan Field, is stuck in traffic, good old Atlanta, Georgia 400 traffic, trying to get here. So hopefully he'll be here in a little while. But we've got a great program coming up. You know, we're going to have two executives from Health Advocate, a West company, joining us. Marcia Otto is the Vice President of Pricing and Transparency Application Health Advocate, and she's going to be really talking about where transparency is today and where transparency is going. A lot of different tools being developed and across the marketplace, and you know, resources emerging to identify cost-effective, high-quality care that can lower healthcare spending. Yet one of the biggest challenges is really getting employees and their families to use these tools. She's going to be addressing that and what's being done to improve engagement and the strategies around improving engagement and price transparency tools. The second segment, starting at 11:30, will be Pam Mortensen, the Executive Vice President of Wellness Solutions at Health Advocate. And she's going to come with us to really talk about where workplace wellness is evolving into really total well-being and the different types of new programs being put in place to really address the employees' total well-being, so kind of the shift from wellness to well-being, you know, creating a flexible, diverse program that goes beyond physical wellness to consider employees' emotional, financial, and social health. You know, well-being programs right now are more effectively addressing the employees' unique needs, and driving engagement is a key to that success. So look forward to having both our guests on the program here in a few minutes. Like to talk a little bit about our November event, where we're co-locating Private Exchange Forums and IHC Forum West. The market is really receiving this co-location very well, and you know, to an attendees that have signed up to attend, you know, they benefit from two programs. They can pick and choose, you know, the programs they want to go to. The general sessions for Private Exchange Forum will be separate, so they can attend all those general sessions, and then, you know, all the general sessions IHC Forum West, and then through the workshop tracks, they could choose whether to go to Private Exchange Forum workshops or our healthcare consumerism tracks. So we're excited about what we're doing. We should have 500 plus attendees there. You know, if you're looking to attend, right now is the time to sign up because we have a current super saver rate in place. It's a $99 for employers, brokers, advisors, benefit consultants to attend for $99. If you're a sponsor out there, we have some unique sponsorship opportunities still available. We'd love to include you in our innovation showcase. So, you know, reach out to us. You can reach out to me directly. You know, Doug Field, you can call me 404-783-9820 or email me dfield@theihcc.com. And I'll bring my team in to get involved with you on making you part of this event. If you got a topic, we're finalizing the program over the next week or so. So still got some panel slots and some opportunities in the program. And on our private exchange forum, you know, there's still been a lot of activity swirling around private exchanges. You know, it did take a hiccup this year. You know, maybe didn't move as fast as people had predicted. But there's a strong undercurrent, I think, going to lead to you know, a lot of activity around benefit admin, benefit delivery, private exchanges, you know, into 2017. So we're excited about bringing this market together in November and then continuing to work together, you know, with our other events in 2017. And our actually opening keynote that's going to be giving at Private Exchange Forum by Ryan Howell, the 11th partner and executive director of Private Exchange Coalition, is going to really talk about private exchanges as a vehicle for delivery system reform. And I think that's as people seek to understand what a private exchange can do for their business, do for their employees, I think these are key elements for everyone to think about as we move through the evolving phases of improving benefit admin and benefit delivery, then moving to providing more choice, then moving to maybe a full private exchange model. But you got to understand really how private exchanges are going to evolve to play a key role in the evolving healthcare environment. You know, what are the latest developments in CMS move towards value-based care? How does the convergence of key market trends affect how consumers are beginning to interact with the healthcare system? Where have private exchanges been? Where are they today? How will they continue to evolve in the future? How are employer groups beginning to directly engage the provider community to achieve healthcare's triple aim? And how are private exchange employer groups can work together to best meet the demands of this healthcare valued economy? So that should be a great kickoff to Private Exchange Forum in November. And then that's going to be followed by our panel discussion. It'll not only pick up this discussion from Ryan's keynote, but we're then really talking about our private exchanges really meeting current expectations. If not, how will they, how can they in the future? And you'll be able to talk to or hear from leading consultants as well as exchange providers in that opening general session. Then we'll move into a mid-morning session on providing the right consumer experience, you know, empowering consumers to select the right benefits, very key. A broker session, where brokers are really going to discuss innovations in benefit tech, innovations in private exchanges and where they see this serving their clients, where they see exchanges and benefit tech platforms really being good tools for they to use to improve benefit delivery for their clients and really help their practice as well. And then our final general session is always a very good one because it's about putting four employers there to really talk about what they're looking to do, what they are doing, you know, with private exchanges and or approving, you know, benefit admin and benefit tech, benefit delivery for their employees and their consumers. So we hope you can join us. That's Private Exchange Forum. You know, Forum West, our general session, we're going to kick open with the state of healthcare consumerism, a multi-stakeholder view. We've got a great panel lining up right now. It's going to be led by our conference co-chair, Sandra Domachevitz, who's principal at Mercer. One of the early thought leaders around healthcare consumerism. So we really look forward to Sandra leading this discussion. Steve Arbach, who's the CEO of Allegis, they're doing some really good things in this consumerism space, is going to be part of the panel. Diane Anderson, Senior VP, Director of Corporate HR and Benefits with Zions Bank Corporation. And there'll be another leading employer and another industry innovator on this panel as well. So I think it'll be a great kickoff to the event. But again, you can check out all of this at our website, theihccforum.com. And while you're there, take a look at some of the partners that we've got with us that are really getting behind this event to really make sure the right employers are there, the right brokers are there, the right health plans are there, the right content is there. You know, CBiz and their whole well-being team, including Dee Eddington, really behind us creating a very unique well-being track. They're also going to showcase their awards, their CBiz and Dee Eddington awards, co-hosts with us and our Superstar and Innovator Awards on the night of November 9th. So that should be a very interesting awards presentation and awards dinner. Acrim, it's an employer-focused risk management group. It's doing a very quality job with us on putting together a whole healthcare cost containment track. You can find that on the website. You'll see some very interesting discussions there around direct contracting, what employers and providers are doing coming together to really better understand how they can form direct contracting relationships. So, you know, really look to look to see you there. Look to have you with us in November. And again, check out theihccforum.com and right now, Super Saver Rates. So, again, look forward to having you with us. But I'm excited to really welcome our next, our first guest on the program today. I'd like to bring on the program Marcia Otto, Vice President of Pricing and Transparency Applications with Health Advocate, a subsidiary of West. Marcia, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, you're coming to us bright and early from San Francisco. Nice to have you here.
Oh, no problem. 8:10 in the morning is not too early, but yes, thank you. It's great to be here.
Hey, give us a little background on what you're doing there around price transparency with Health Advocate, and then we'll kind of jump into some of these questions too.
So, yeah, sorry, I've got allergies here. Health Advocate, just quick little background, is the nation's largest healthcare advocacy and assistance company, and our core business is really around our award-winning health advocacy program that helps members navigate complex health insurance-related issues. And we have a bunch of other complementary solutions as well, like wellness, EAP, chronic care solutions, et cetera. And we also leverage data that we get from our self-funded clients to create a pricing transparency solution. We also have personalized health communications, all this to help the member make more informed decisions and get more value out of the healthcare system. So where pricing transparency comes in, we already have a lot of, with our core advocacy program, we already have a lot of touch points with the membership who are calling in for a variety of reasons. We built from this data our own pricing transparency solution so we could help support them when they're calling in, because we noticed that many people were calling in asking about questions with their high their high deductible plans. And so we built a tool, but what really, you know, that it's very on par with what's out there in the competition, you know, a tool to be able to look up prices for medical procedures and find out how much it's going to cost them out of pocket based on their benefits today, and then to see quality information side by side so that the member can make the best value-based decision. And so that's what Health Advocate's been doing, but what we really do is we tie it with our advocacy to have the human touch for those that want to schedule the appointment or they've narrowed down their choices. Those who want to do self-service can do self-service, and those who don't can still call an advocate. Or for those who are calling in for other reasons, we try to steer the conversation towards pricing transparency.
Makes a lot of sense, because people need a lot of help, don't they? I mean, people really need help, and some people can go to self-service and be okay with that. Others need a little hand-holding to be guided to where they need to go.
That's exactly right. You're on my team here. You're hired.
Yeah. Hey, Marcia, talk a little bit about, you know, where you've seen, you know, price transparency change since it really first emerged in this space.
Yeah, so I have actually been focused on pricing transparency and provider transparency tools since early 2007. So I've actually been around for since, you know, it's been really its birth in a way. Originally, a lot of payers were terrified of providing this information for fear that the market, you know, other providers would compare their costs with the other, saying, hey, look at that guy's getting paid more. And it would really kill their what differentiated them with their negotiating power. And there were lawsuits, and when I worked for Blue Shield years ago, Blue Shield even wanted to show quality information on providers and had this blue ribbon thing, and they got sued. And throughout the years, you know, it's all worked itself out, and now every single payer is offering a pricing transparency tool, and it hasn't really changed the market. Unfortunately, it hasn't even changed it enough to there's still differentiators out there. And what they feared was going to happen did not happen. That they would all say, well, look what this person's getting paid. I want to get paid that as well. So it's definitely now the norm, and it's accepted, and there's a lot of vendors out in the space, and a lot of employers are very interested in this. What really makes it what's really changed since the early days is the need for it is growing and growing. And, I'm preaching to the choir here, but everyone knows, you know, that the incredible growth with the high deductible plans. Kaiser Family Foundation says kind of all firms as of 2015, 46% of them are in high deductible plans of over $1,000 or more deductible, and those are growing and growing. So no one gets, which I had 2 years ago and I missed dearly, the $250 deductible, family deductible plans that, you know, that don't give anybody any skin in the game to make these cost decisions. Out-of-pocket costs are, since these high deductible plans are out there, the out-of-pocket costs are skyrocketing. They say it's growing 68% in the last 5 years, mostly because of the high deductible plans. So people are going, you know, there's interest and more need for it. There was just still a huge hurdle over education.
Yep. What do you see? I mean, you kind of alluded to some of the benefits. Maybe we can just talk a little bit about this, some more of the benefits of healthcare price transparency, because I want to get into this engagement and education. I think that's a key industry pain point that needs to be solved. But what are some of the benefits of healthcare price transparency and the corresponding tools and resources that you see?
Well, the benefits are a couple-fold. You know, the first benefit is, you know, to the employer. The employer is moving their employees to these high deductible plans, thus putting more of the onus, financial responsibility on the member. And so the member, you know, the employee is looking to the employer to give them tools to deal with these new plans. And then, of course, the biggest benefit is to the member who's got to pay these huge out-of-pocket amounts. And so if they are getting a MRI and they've got a $3,000, you know, deductible, they would want to find one that maybe was $400 instead of a $2,000 one at a hospital. So, you know, trying to understand that imaging centers is a big educational point. So that's the real benefit, you know, and employers are also hoping that by having their employees go to lower priced providers, could also help lower their medical expenses. If a member saw that Hospital A cost $42,000 for a knee replacement and Hospital B cost, you know, on average, you know, $60,000, even though maybe their out-of-pocket might have been maximized, their out-of-pocket maximum had been met, at least they could say, wow, this place, you know, there is good quality places for lower prices, and if I go to the more expensive one, this may impact my employer next year with higher higher cost medical plans.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Marcia. Go ahead.
No, that's it. That's it. I was just pausing.
You know, so a lot of this is pretty logical, and you know, for why employees and their families should be using these tools. So why do you think they're not using them more?
That is a great question. And right, so the huge buzz, everybody wants pricing transparency, but if you build it, will they come? And there's been a number of articles, just even the last few months, the one in JAMA, that talked about how, you know, there's maybe 10% utilization, or even one a couple of years ago that only 2% of members have been using these cost tools, and while 90% of the health plans even offer them. The Catalyst Payment for Reform did that one. So there is low utilization. So what is really driving this? I mean, I think the first thing is that people don't even understand, are not yet, even though they have a need for it because they're on high deductible plans, they don't even understand what to do about it. The Public Agenda, March of last year, did a study that showed that 57% of Americans do not even understand that some doctors, even within their own insurance plans network, may charge more than others for the same services. And I quote that all the time because it's so powerful. It's like people don't even get that there's price differences. So maybe they're carrying a huger burden, but they don't even know that there's something they can do about it.
Go ahead. I was going to interject something here just to get your perspective, because you live and breathe this. And some of this, though, Marcia, doesn't it make sense why they're not engaged yet and why they're not using it? I mean, because, you know, we're moving to a shared responsibility environment with high deductibles, you know, et cetera, and more consumer choice. But we're moving from an entitlement, you know, type of program. So they didn't have to think about these things, correct? So it makes sense that they don't know, and people don't like to change. And even though they've been forced to change with maybe different plans out there, it's going to take a while to catch up, is it not?
Education is the biggest hurdle. So, the research is showing that people are holding off on all medical care, including preventive care, because they're just like, oh, it costs too much, not knowing, you know, just not even understanding everything. So education is the biggest hurdle. You know, if you build a tool, will they come? No, because people don't even understand about it. I think the biggest problem is how long it's going to take for people to understand this. And that's, you know, that's what Health Advocate feels like. One of the things it does that's really unique is we have people to talk to, and we start this conversation. If someone's calling in about a knee issue, we're going to say, oh, are you getting an MRI? Have you considered how much, you know, have you considered looking at prices? Let me help you do that. So there needs, you know, there needs to be somebody steering the conversation, as well as the employer. You know, if they purchase a tool like ours or some others and just send one little note in their, you know, in the benefit, you know, the enrollment guide, well, guess what? You know, someone is not going to do anything about it. So, you know, there's a lot of talk in the marketplace. You know, the first step one is awareness, and then step two is doing things to really drive change and or savings. And, of course, a lot of companies are talking incentives. You know, incentivize them the first time, just get them to even use the tool so that maybe by the next time that they might actually have something that they could, they will remember that tool and then use it. Honeywell, there's just an article that came out that said that they switch from an incentive to a penalty and had tremendous four times savings results with no impact on employee satisfaction. They picked a number of surgeries or imaging, I think it was a couple of surgeries, and said if you don't call this service that we have before you get it done, you are going to pay a penalty of $1,000. And their employees were actually fine with it and did it, and then they found savings that way. So there's, you know, just there's got to be ways, and then there's the whole concept of reference-based pricing. I think that's one of the more powerful ways to also drive people. You know, really make it clear that if they, you know, give them a tool, and then, you know, give them something that's really going to make them put more skin and even more skin in the game, that they're going to pay even more out of pocket beyond a ceiling price for a procedure, then, you know, it's going to drive utilization.
That makes a lot of sense, and I like your model too. I mean, people want to talk to people still. People need to be taken somewhere, and then once they become comfortable with it, then they'll use the tools. I mean, people need that multiple ways. I mean, millennials might go right to the self-service tool and be okay with it, right? But
exactly.
While people like myself might need a little hand-holding.
Complicated. I mean, if the average person can't even understand what the word deductible even means, you know, all of us are so in tune with it. We know what deductible, copay, and coinsurance, but it's not understandable in how it's applied and how you got to meet your deductible first, and then you might have copay, and then coinsurance kicks in at a certain percentage. You know, it's all completely complicated for the average. For even more than the average person, for most people out there who are not working in the healthcare industry.
Yeah. Talk a little bit, if you would, Marcia, you know, we got probably about 3-4 minutes here left, but talk a little bit about how transparency can be better integrated with, you know, the other employee benefits and programs.
Well, I was mentioning, you know, they've got to have skin in the game. So, you know, if they have a low deductible plan, you know, they're not going to be driven to do it. So, you know, there's some thought that they need to have some cost sharing in there, else there's going to be the lack of incentive to shop. You know, they could just change their benefit design to be less on just copays and more on coinsurance at some certain point. And then I mentioned that CalPERS, or the example of reference-based pricing, that, you know, that's something I think is going to grow, and according to some Aon Hewitt study, that 53% of companies are considering it for the future, while 6% are doing it now. You know, people could Google this if they want to learn more, but CalPERS not only save their employees by setting a ceiling of $30,000 for hip and knee replacements, they save them $300,000 one year, but they also save themselves $2.8 million in medical costs, and then they drove the cost of health care down by they went with this reference-based pricing. In California, there were, 46 hospitals that did it for the ceiling amount, and then a couple years later, 72 hospitals did it for the ceiling or below amount. So there are ways to drive, you know, reducing costs and drive people to these tools, as well as incentives and possibly even sticks out there in the marketplace to get them to understand there are ways that they can help themselves with lowering their out-of-pocket costs and help their employer by lowering medical costs overall.
Yeah, sounds good. So what's next as we kind of come to the end of the program? What's next for pricing transparency?
I think what's next, you know, I mean, has it changed dramatically in the last 7 years? Not necessarily. I think just what's next is more and more people just becoming aware of it. And, you know, making, you know, and it's going to be probably bundled in with a whole bunch of other things that their employees are doing. There's a big movement lately with, you know, taking all the benefits that an employer offers their employee and put it in one place and driving them and helping and proactively engaging them to drive, you know, to use these tools to get better benefit out of them.
Yeah, makes sense. Hey, this has been great having you on the program, Marcia. I'd like to give you an opportunity to leave our audience with some key takeaways, if you would, please.
Sure. You know, pricing transparency, while it has not shown to have great utilization yet, there's no one out there, any of the analysts, thinking that it's the tools problem. It's really all about the education problem. There is a great need for it to bring that education to the forefront, to the, you know, for a member to understand how to actually shop for care like they do for many other things. So there, I think it's gonna, you're still gonna be hearing about it again and again, and I think it has a great future. And there's even you know, tools being built out there. Health Advocate's gonna launch one as well for helping people understand their pharmacy spend, as well as even dental spend. So there's going to be a lot more movement towards shopping away from the traditional model of all you can eat, you know, healthcare for whatever you want and see whatever provider you want. There's, I think it's still going to be around, and companies like Health Advocate, who could help walk the person through this and help them understand it, will move that forward faster.
And they can find information on this at Health Advocate's site, right? Healthadvocate.com, correct?
Yes, healthadvocate.com, or they could send me an email, mato@healthadvocate.com, if they have any further questions.
Thanks, Marcia, so much. You have a great Labor Day weekend, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Well, I got finally in studio with me, Jonathan Field, a radio producer. Finally got out of Atlanta traffic. Tough morning, huh, Jonathan?
Yeah, I'm not sure what's going on out there. Gridlock all the way up in the city.
Very good discussion with Marcia, really.
Yeah.
On transparency. And I think, you know, I think one of the key things she and I talked about is that it is about education,
mm-hmm.
and engagement.
Right.
But it's not surprising that where consumers are right now with engaging, because they've been faced with doing this for the first time, and behavior
right.
change takes a little time. So I think the things that Health Advocate's doing to add a voice and other
mm-hmm.
touches, you know, to the self-service, you know, makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and Marcia actually recently penned an article for us. So if you want to go onto our website later today and read a little bit more about this topic, you'll see right on the homepage, Getting Your Money's Worth from Pricing Transparency Tools. So a lot of the info covered in today's interview, you can, you know, follow up and read that.
Yep, yep. Well, I'd like to bring on our next guest, a associate with Marcia, talking about, you know, again, Health Advocate is, you know, a very integrated model to really serve consumers and employers. And Pam Mortensen is Executive Vice President of Wellness Solutions at Health Advocate, a subsidiary of West. Pam, good morning.
Good morning. Great to be here.
Yeah, great to have you on the program. I just had a great discussion with Marcia about transparency. Looking forward to this discussion about well-being.
Great. Fantastic.
Hey,
thank you.
You bet. Hey, Pam, give a little background on Health Advocate and your area of wellness, and then we'll kind of dive into this shift from wellness to well-being, if you don't mind.
Sure, absolutely. Well, as Marcia just said, Health Advocate is a subsidiary of West Corporation. We are the nation's leading healthcare advocacy and assistance company. We serve over 11,000 clients, some of the nation's largest companies here in the U.S., we provide advocacy services that really helps members navigate across really a very complex healthcare and insurance-related environment, saving both time and money for the employer and employee, of course. But, you know, our services really are a suite of solutions that include wellness, EAP, work life, chronic care solutions, and really among many, many other services. And we do offer an integrated program that really combines all of these services into a single kind of convenient member-centric solution. And that starts to really get into the well-being solution set that we'll talk about here today.
Yeah, that's great. So talk first, before we jump into well-being, talk first about some of the challenges that you see in working with employers that they're currently facing with regards to their health care and benefits.
Sure, you bet. Well, I think we all probably see the trends out there. The medical health care costs are continuing to rise. And specifically from 2016 to 2017, we're hearing numbers that they're expected to increase on average between 6.5% to 8%, depending on the type of plan. Prescription drug costs are also trending on the increase as well. They're saying about 13% increase expected from 2016 to 17. Mostly that increase is coming from higher usage and then specialty drugs, of course. But also, you know, even with 50% of the large to mid-size employers offering these high deductible plan options, we've also heard trends that about 70% of those employers are still expecting their health care benefits budgets to increase in 2017. So a lot of concern there in the market around these health plan costs. I think the other two things that we see as challenges certainly are employers want to see employee bases have higher and better health and wellness across their populations. And they also, I think, would say that benefit programs that they're offering need to drive greater engagement that they believe will lead to healthier and more productive workforces.
I think it's also a key retention tool, is it not? As more and more
Absolutely.
Companies compete for skilled workers, you know, skilled.
You bet. Together. Retention is a big part of these well-being programs, you bet.
So talk about the shift from traditional wellness to well-being, and what is it and what's driving that?
Sure, you bet. Well, wellness programs have tended to really focus more on the physical part of it. So physical activities, walking, running, smoking cessation programs, nutritional counseling. Often there are incentives around those to, you know, incent employees to participate in those walks or runs and how many miles they're logging. But more organizations are starting to shift from just wellness to more well-being and really adopting a more holistic approach for that individual. So things that would be incorporated into a broader well-being program would be more enhanced programs, and they're really intended to meet the employee where they are in their life. And those programs would include things not just the physical wellness that I described, but also financial wellness, mental, emotional wellness, social community programs, and even professional work-life balance programs. And I think what we're finding is really creating a more personalized program, again, that meets the needs of where that employee is in their life.
You know, Pam, I was talking to Dee Eddington the other day on a call, mm-hmm. and we talked about caring as a part of this. You know,
yeah.
And then mindfulness, which is going to be covered at our upcoming forum that we did that in May. I mean, all these are emerging as part of this well-being, correct? I mean,
they absolutely are. And again, I think you've got to recognize these employee populations are very diverse. We've got baby boomers, millennials, Gen Xers that are all in the workforce, and they all have different needs. You know, and certainly need to make sure that these employers are offering programs that really matter to the individual.
Yeah. And, you know, I know it sounds pretty simple to understand, but when you talk about financial wellness and how it's emerged, it just is common sense that you can't have somebody, you know, address healthy eating habits or healthy exercise habits if they're stressed out about their mortgage, right? Stressed out about their bills. You've got to help them address the financial part to even get the physical part, you know, doing what it should be doing. Correct?
That's absolutely true. And, you know, I think that's exactly what we're seeing. You know, there could be certainly a young adult who might be training for his first 5K, could be really experiencing a lot of stress related to maybe paying off student loans, for example. And they're going to be seeking, you know, very, very different resources from maybe a mother that's working, that's managing, you know, her chronic high blood pressure and maybe caring for aging parents. So very, very diverse needs, you know, with those two examples.
So give us an example, or talk a bit about how, you know, if employers are listening here, whether right now live or going to access this podcast, you know, how can they implement this program and give examples of some best practices organizations can consider to help with this transition?
You bet. Well, I think certainly one, you know, I guess a big part of our experience in working with so many employers across the nation is really if you're starting out to develop a program for the first time, keep it simple. Start simple, set one goal that's measurable for year one, and learn from that across the employee population. I would also say another best practice would be to conduct biometric screenings, do a health risk assessment, and understand kind of the importance and what you get from that data across the entire population. And then really taking a look at the claims data, if assuming that most of the employers do have access to their claims data, what are the top three biggest claims costs? And I think if you can use those data points that I just mentioned, then you can really begin to construct a program. But there's probably some other best practices that should be also considered as you start to drive a well-being program. One is assess the health and culture, as I mentioned, and that's really, again, making sure you understand the organization workforce. And one way in which to do that would be to just do a simple survey across the employee base to really get a good grasp of the culture and the things that matter to that employee population. So that would be certainly one best practice. And I think, as I mentioned, selecting the right mix of a program, a one-size-fits-all program isn't necessarily going to meet the needs of every person in your population. So the right mix of services is going to be very key. And then communicating often, we find that to be a very solid best practice, helping employees continue to understand what those services are and how they can help them, and keeping that front and center. And I think we also find that communicating often isn't necessarily just sending out an email. It may mean, you know, a text message or an email, or it could be even an automated voice outreach that goes out. But I think those kinds of things, along with posters and materials that are sent, is very important to keeping that engagement up across the employee base. And then, you know, another area would be incentives. And certainly incentives, I think, are really important to generate participation as you start with a well-being program. Typically, it's voluntary, but incentives are really an effective way to get employees involved. And certainly, there's a lot of rules and regs associated with offering incentives, so that's going to be important that an employer, you know, understands those EEOC regs and certainly those around the Health Insurance Portability Accountability Acts. All of that has to be, you know, thought through.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and then I think the other point, last point, is really you've got to continue to evaluate your program. Continue to get feedback, what's working, what's not working, and make adjustments as you go. I think that's, again, a critically important element to driving a successful well-being program.
When you and members of your team are out there working with employers across the spectrum of who Health Advocate works with, what are some of the hurdles that you and your team are working on to really get an employer's light bulb to go off and say, and have kind of an aha moment like, okay, wow, I was just starting to get my arms around wellness. Now you're talking to me about well-being. So I'm a little overwhelmed.
Right. You know, again, I think continuing to communicate what these options are, what these services are, is an incredibly important element. Because if employees are not aware, then, of course, they're not taking advantage of those. So that's probably a hurdle that we see often. A lot of these employees don't even realize these services are available. So very, very important aspect of you know, really enabling a well-being program across an employee population.
I agree with that. But even coming back to the beginning, is it getting the employers to see why they should do this. What are some of the things you and your team do to get kind of the employer to have that aha moment? Say, okay,
yeah.
Wow, now I see where well-being is where I need to go. We're putting together a well-rounded well-being program.
Yeah, again, I think general wellness or physical wellness are always great places to start. But when you, again, start to really create a more personalized approach, there tends to be, greater productivity and even health cost reductions. You know, if you're supporting a chronic care type of program, or maybe there's a particular part of your population that is going through, delivering babies. You know, those kinds of healthcare costs can get to be very expensive if someone ends up having a baby prematurely. We've got programs that can certainly help support and keep a particular pregnancy on track and hopefully help avoid some of those high costs. But those are the kinds of ROI paybacks and examples that we tend to show clients the importance around a broader well-being program and not just focus on kind of the general activity, but other things that can get very personalized to an employee population to meet the needs of the individual.
Makes a lot of sense, Pam. So talk about, you've kind of talked about it throughout this segment, but talk a little bit more about how what you're doing at Health Advocate that's a unique approach to well-being.
Sure. I think, again, working with Health Advocate, we are able to really develop personalized programs. And we do that through both online as well as through live coaching programs. And we can do that to support anything, very simple in terms of programs to some of the most complex needs across an employee population. And because we offer such a full variety and full array of well-being programs and services, we really can address the whole person and really make it personalized to meet the needs of that employer's population, I should say. And I think having just one partner rather than multiple partners to create this well-being program does really provide a more cost-effective and more efficient way in pulling all of this together. And, I would say Health Advocate is really unique in that we've got trained coaches, nurses, clinicians, benefits experts that all come together to provide, not only that live expertise, but in combination with our technology tools, and really are designed to help get people engaged and helping them make better informed decisions about their health and staying on track toward a healthier lifestyle. But, again, I think that the clients that work with us really would say that we're able to help reduce those medical costs, really drive greater productivity and engagement across an employee base, and really bring about better health outcomes.
That's great. Pam, it's been great having you on the program. It's been a great discussion and look forward to continuing this sometime in the future. I'd like to give you a chance to leave our audience with a couple takeaways, too, if you would, please.
You bet. I think certainly, as I said, one of the key factors in developing a well-being program is to understand the employee culture and, what's going to be needed to meet those particular needs in a personalized way. And I think a well-being program and really making sure that you're addressing the holistic person will help drive greater engagement and hopefully retention and higher productivity. And again, I think Health Advocate is really well positioned to be really that right partner in providing that well-being package overall.
Pam, thank you so much. And if somebody's listening and wants to get in contact with you or find out more about what Health Advocate is doing around wellness, can you let them know how, please?
Sure. They can go to healthadvocate.com and go to our website, and there's contact information there, or they can certainly get in touch with me, and that's P.A. Mortenson, M-O-R-T-E-N-S-O-N, at west.com.
Thank you, Pam, so much for joining us today. You have a great Labor Day weekend, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you. You do the same. Appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. Take care. Great discussion on both transparency and well-being. And again, at our West Coast event, you'll see a whole track focused on well-being, the very different moving parts of well-being. So I want to thank both Marcia and Pam for joining us today. I want to thank my audience for our audience for being with us today. I want to remind you that if you want to access any of these podcasts and look back on the history of our show, go to theicc.com, click on the radio button, and you can go right to the archive and access these. And a final reminder about our Super Saver rates for Private Exchange Forum and IHC Forum West. Go to our website, theicc.com, where you can access the program, access information, and register Super Saver rates. I hope all of you have a very safe and enjoyable Labor Day weekend. And we'll talk again next Friday on Healthcare Consumerism Radio.